Welcome to Magic in the Moment, Mindfulness in Real Time. My name is Clayton Platt, and I'll be your host for this podcast journey. Now, for many people, practicing mindfulness has very little to do with sitting on a cushion, lighting incense, or even focusing on their breath, just paying attention to what they're doing at any moment. And doing this intentionally can create that same magic. Our time together is intended to share how mindfulness plays out in everyday life for our guests. Now, before we begin, here's a word from our sponsor, Meditation for Leadership. We all feel it. The pressure to keep up, to perform, to push through. But lasting success doesn't come from speeding up. It comes from slowing down, leaning in, and creating the space to lead from within. That space is where we shift from autopilot to intention, building mindful habits that strengthen focus and calm. It's where we stay connected to our values and purpose, choosing to respond instead of react. It's where we unlock our potential to positively shape our own lives and empower others to grow and thrive. That's the work of Meditation for Leadership. If you're ready to create the space for sustainable success, visit meditationforleadership.org. Hi, welcome back to Magic in the Moment, Mindfulness in Real Time. And I'm your host, Clayton Platt. And today, I'm honored to have as my guest, Timothy Matthews. And Timothy has had a long career in instructional design with a global learning and development company. But more important, he is a care minister at his church, and he's the author of a wonderful book that will be published soon called The Night Before Palmas. And I really look forward to our discussion around that. And he's also the creator of the Kindness Challenge. We'll talk about all of that. And Timothy, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Clayton. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
When we were talking before, one of the things that came up was I don't want to call it a habit, but a tendency of your mom to ask someone, you know, who is a guest in the house, have you eaten? And this was something that, you know, she would not let pass. It was something that was important to her. And I loved what it meant to you. So I thought, Timothy, can you give me a little background? Why did you share that with me? And why is that phrase so important to you as a representation of what's important to your mom and to you as well?
Sure. Sure. Well, her example of asking all of my friends, my sister's friends, have you eaten? As the first statement, her question, it's just an example of how she put other people's needs in front of herself. She was a charge nurse at a hospital in Kansas City area, which being a nurse all is about putting other people in front of you as well. It was one of those questions that I have friends after college when I've met them on the street or in a business, they would remember that. They would bring it up and say, your mom would ask me if I wanted pie. And not a hi, hello, but do you want pie? Or to make sure that you're taken care of. And my mom had a special name for my sister's friends and eventually over to my friends. It was Murphus. And it was mom for us. And so when you're growing up, you're a teenager and you're having difficulty at your home, our house was a place to come, where you knew the first thing you were going to be asked is, have you eaten? And your needs are going to be taken care of. And so it's on a license plate on her car. It says Murphus. It's something she lived into. It's quirky and always fun when someone asks you what that means on the license plate, because it always leads to a story. And it helped me to understand that to live a full life, it requires awareness and a mindful intention. Exploring something simple like a question like that, it reflects your presence, the care that you give, even your emotional attunement. It's your core element of mindfulness. And I think what you're doing with your mindfulness groups is so critical. The world is always in the need of mindfulness. So we can connect ourselves to our personal journeys. It's how we shape our understanding of kindness as a mindful act. And it stops you, I think, sometimes from acting in a certain way, because you have to be mindful of what that action or the words are going to be to the other person. I mean, yeah. Mom just put that into our faces, and it's something that we really look forward to. I see my sister doing it now as a mom. So it's something that grows and continues.
I love that. And I love the way it manifests exactly what you're saying in terms of putting other people first, checking into their needs. And I just also want to say that you mentioned your sister's doing that, but you know, this has passed down generationally to you as well, because we actually, in many, many respects, but I first met you mm-hmm. as a result of you being the co-creator or creator of the employee resource group at this training company, the Mind and Fitness Cafe. And to me, that was an act of selflessness, because you knew that this was something that employees around the world needed. And I saw this come up as, oh, this is, came up on my feed. It's like the Mind and Fitness Cafe. And I reached out to you and said, would a monthly meditation be helpful? And you jumped on it. You said, yeah, sure would. So I want to appreciate that and the selflessness of that, and something that clearly provides a need, but it's also an extension of what you learned from your mom.
Absolutely.
Yep. So I'd love now to kind of explore, if we can, go a little bit deeper into this sort of the sense of, you know, have you eaten? What do you need? You know, this is clearly a question of checking in. It's a way of being present for someone else. And, you know, how else do you think this shows up? I know I've mentioned some of the other things you're involved in, but let's kind of begin there, you know. How does this sense of being present for the needs of others show up? And, for example, specifically with some of the stuff you do and things that you've seen?
Well, I think it's a intentionality more than anything. You need to have an awareness that, and this may sound crass, but you're not the only person in the world. There's other people, and every interaction that we have with those other people, every single one of us, we're holding onto baggage, and it's hidden baggage that only we get to see. And when you have that understanding of yourself, you have to understand that you're holding on to baggage too. And you may not admit it. You may not even know it in many cases. But taking the time to assume positive intent and acknowledging that we're not alone, that everyone in the world is here and we have to interact. We're all together. I think you have two ways of going at it. You can push people away, or you can bring them closer. And kindness brings us closer. It allows you to validate and recognize the other person's value. And then it allows them to recognize your value too. It is something that helps me to have a better understanding of myself. When I'm more open to kindness, I recognize when I'm not, that I feel worse. It's something I learned as a care minister, that when we go to pray for someone and we come out of the prayer session, many times we don't even know what we said. We feel drained, but we also feel filled. It's an odd duality. And I think it's because we're tapping into something deep inside ourselves, and we're recognizing something deep inside someone else. And so that takes some energy, but it's a positive energy, because you're better at the other end of it. And I think that's one of the more amazing types of things that we can do. And it's a simple thing. Kindness is a very simple thing to do.
Yeah. And one of the things, first of all, the fact that we need to be paying attention to this concept of kindness, because as we look around the world right now, we don't see a lot of signs of it. And without pointing fingers, right? There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of animosity being spread around. I had an interesting conversation recently with someone who's a professor. And one of the things that they experienced in a conference was the Just Like Me meditation. Mm. And what was fascinating about that was that it was done in a way where people were walking around in a circle, and it was almost like musical chairs. The music stopped, and whoever was straight in front of you, you needed to do this just like me. And that is, I'm looking at Timothy and I'm saying, Timothy, just like me, you have suffering. Just like me, you love your family. Just, and going through a whole litany of different things, but that shared humanity. And so what I'm hearing from you is that kindness is a thread that goes through all humanity, mm-hmm. but is often unseen, unappreciated, right?
It is. And there's one, it brings up an idea in my, or a topic in my mind. There's a group called Braver Angels. They're trying to bring people from different sides of the political spectrum together to talk and have a conversation and do it in a nice way. And my wife and I have thought about it, but my biggest fear is, what if that person on the other side isn't going to be kind? And I think that's, even in other areas, that's a consideration that we have to think about. Are we going to be the brave one to be kind first? It seems like a really weird question, because it shouldn't take bravery to be kind, but it does. We have to allow ourselves to take down the walls that we've built, because that's our comfort zone, and do something outside of our comfort zone to be kind. But the benefits is amazing. You know, it's a lot brighter when you take down your walls because the sun can come in.
Yeah. I think that, again, that whole sense of who takes the first step.
Yep.
And it's so easy to say, well, you know, I'm afraid of them because I'm seeing vitriol, or I'm seeing anger and hatred, whatever. So I'm going to be afraid. And that's human. That's natural. I'm not going to judge that. But reconciliation requires someone to take the step forward.
Yep.
And I think if we believe in the innate importance and human value of kindness, we need to be willing to lead with that.
Absolutely. And one thing I've mentioned in the kindness challenge is, no act of kindness is too small. So if it's opening the door, smiling at somebody, waving, when you're in the grocery line, you see someone with two products behind you and you have a cart full of stuff, letting them go forward first, you know, asking someone how they're doing and actually wanting to hear, not just, oh yeah, everything's great, but encouraging the conversation. That kindness that we have has to start with mindfulness and acceptance. Then we can turn it into action and take that small first step. Hold the door for someone who's behind you. Now, it might not mean anything to you, but it could be the world for them.
100%. It's really interesting how often I noticed that small act of holding the door for someone, and looking like, that was a surprise, or saying, I'll take your shopping cart back. Don't worry about that.
Yep.
Or I'm in the habit of picking up trash when I'm walking the dog. I'm not going to, you know, I can't pick it all up, but if I see something and I have a free hand, or I sometimes carry a bag, it's like, plop it in, you know, and I'm not trying to be, you know, some sort of saint. I'm just trying to, like, you know, do a little good.
Absolutely. And what you're doing is, you're being present, you're noticing things, and you're choosing to respond with care. And as you said, it could be as simple as picking up trash that's on the ground because you want your place to look better.
So let me ask you this. What was your introduction to the topic of mindfulness? In whatever form it took.
You know, for the seriousness of it, it came from, I'd say, three different places. Brené Brown, incredible author. If you haven't read her books, you have to read her books, because she really comes to the core of what it means to be human. You, Clayton, actually, is the second, just to raise you up.
Thank you.
And then the third, actually, is a workout program I'm doing called Les Mills Combat. Les Mills is a New Zealand company, and one of their workout programs is actually mindfulness and meditation. And they're fabulous. They just created a new one called Colors, where they go deep into colors. You just lay there and you listen to the idea. The first color is black. came before the light in almost every religion, and the importance of that color in your consideration of how it impacts your life. And where do you see it? You'll see it in more places than you think, every single color on the spectrum. There are 10-minute sessions. My wife and I usually do them before we go to bed. And it sticks with you. You get better dreams when you do it before you go to bed.
I can imagine. Yeah. And I love you mentioned Brené Brown, because Brené is a very good example of mindfulness in real time, mm-hmm. in that she appreciates what meditation can do, but she's the first one to say, I don't meditate, right? Mm-hmm. But so much of her, the topics on which she has done TED Talks on vulnerability and empathy, all that good stuff, it's imbued with needing to be present.
Yes.
And that's something that she acknowledges. And to me, this is one of the dot connectors, if you will, with this podcast, which is many people who listen to this, I'm sure, are curious, but don't sit down on a cushion to meditate. And others have an app, or they've heard about this. I mean, you'd have to really be living in a cave not to, in these days, be aware of the term mindfulness. But how do I practice it? How does it show up? And I love those examples. And I appreciate the shout out, because, again, my personal mission is just to make this concept as accessible as possible.
Sure.
So how else for you then, with the things we've talked about, and also just let's get specific on the kindness challenge. How has sort of developing this concept and working hard to make it sort of known, how has this played out in your life, and what impact has it had?
Well, the kindness challenge came from the book, The Night Before Promise.
Okay.
And the core idea of the book is that kindness is a daily intentional practice. Small acts that require awareness and empathy can bring you to a better place. The book itself is about my two dogs, Daisy May and Lily Rose. We lost Lily Rose a year ago March, and her death is what spurred me to write more and to actually get serious about getting things published. And the book itself, the two dogs are going after a mouse, and then Santa Claus shows up and tells them, that's not the nice thing to do. And you're good girls, so you should act more good. And they talk a little bit about kindness and empathy. My publisher, Landon Hale Press, mentioned that it would be a good idea to have more to the book. They wanted to see what the growth from the story would be. And the kindness challenge was the first thing I thought of. How can I get everyone involved in something that is outside of and doesn't even reference The Night Before Promise, but it can be something we do on a daily basis? And so I put together a calendar of 28 days of just kind activities for ourselves, because if you're not being kind to yourself, it's really hard to be kind to others. And then what can you do to be kind for others? And I made it intentionally to be something that can just be rotated and repeated over and over and over again. Some months have 30 days, some have 31. And then I also included in the kindness challenge documents a blank calendar, because you might have things that you think are more appropriate for where you are for your kindness. It's something that I envision families printing it out and having all the children do it. And so how can I be kind to my sister? How can I be kind to my brother? Being a brother, I know it's difficult to be kind to brothers sometimes, because we're brothers. We're difficult, you know? So I wanted it to be something that would be accessible, but also impactful. And I really felt like that's what happened with it and is continuing to happen with it.
I love that. And it's certainly something that, you know, could be intentionally started in December, yep. right? If one was thinking about leading up to Christmas, for example, or Palmas, right? Mm-hmm. In my family, we might swap our you know, we have the 25 days of Crunchmas, which my daughter-in-law, who used to work for Peloton, suggested that that would be a great way for us, all of us, to get fit. And I love it, because what would happen is post-December, we'd keep doing it. So I'm thinking about that for the kindness challenge. You could start it at some logical time during the year and say, oh, this is cool. Let's keep doing it.
Yeah.
So
you feel the difference. It makes a big difference.
So in your life, then, obviously, you're doing the work. And I think you've referenced sort of how you feel, but maybe some specifics about how this makes you feel. You know, what are some of the specific ways that you've noticed this plays out in your life and has made, you know, your everyday a better version of yourself?
I think there's two sides to it. And I think it's easier to go forward to the idea of what it feels like when I don't act kindly. It's usually the negative parts are the easiest things for us to capture. Just human nature, I think. So when I'm not kind, I feel as though I can't sleep in a soundly manner. I feel like my gut, my core, becomes more sour. I feel like there's something that's not right, but I can't identify it, which bugs the heck out of me because I like to have everything ordered and labeled. And when I know that I'm not being kind, that's usually the root to my issues. When I am kind, I feel lighter. I feel more engaged in everything that I'm doing. I feel like I have better purpose. And even though I can't define that purpose sometimes, it has to be just being nice and being kind. When I come out of a meeting, I want to be able to think that everyone said, well, Timothy's a really nice guy. Not, oh, that guy's a jerk. No.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think the ability to have that awareness, that awareness of how your intentions are coming across. And when you have the awareness that, I want to be seen as a kind person, I want to act in that way. And let's face it, as a human being, there are times when that doesn't happen. And noticing the embodied feeling of, oof, right? Like that felt off. To me, if you're not paying attention, if you don't have a connect, the mind, body, and gut connect, you're going to miss that. And that's a shame because your body is giving you these signals all the time, right?
It is.
One of my early mentors around mindfulness, George Kinder, wrote a book. I'm just going to shout out anybody who listened. I think he wrote it in the late 90s, but the book was called The Seven Stages of Money Maturity. And it basically takes the hero's journey through dealing with your coming to grips with money issues. And as George would say, rich, poor, indifferent, everybody has money issues. And our ability to kind of get our heads around that is very helpful, especially for someone, as I was at the time, a financial advisor. Okay. And I happen to notice in our background that not at the same time, but we both were for Smith Barney at different times. So we were linked in the universe in different ways. But the reason I mentioned this is that George would talk about the internal flinch when you did something that was contrary to your moral compass, right?
Yes.
And he said, for example, if the clerk at a store gave you more change than you deserved and you just pocketed it, there's a flinch inside.
Yep.
And if you cheat on your taxes, which I think probably 98% of at least Americans probably do a little bit of cheating on. When you do that, if you're paying attention, you can feel a little, oh, right?
Yeah.
And paying attention to that is critical, isn't it?
Absolutely. Clayton, can you think of a time in your past where you can still think of it, you can still feel it, where you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or I should have done something different?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
And that's the idea that I think of, that it's easier for us to say, oh, I shouldn't have done that. The better thing to say is, next time I won't do it. So right. Look to the forward part and use that mistake as a learning opportunity.
And yeah, and also, Timothy, just along these lines, when we do something right, when we do something kind, to notice how that feels.
Yes.
Because the neuroscience behind that is pretty clear. If we take a moment to recognize, and people go, oh, I don't, that's, you know, that's a self-aggrandizing. It's, well, actually, you need to do that if you want to repeat it, because the brain will go, oh, that felt good. And when something feels good to the brain, what does it do? It looks for more opportunities to do it.
Absolutely. It releases endorphins, the happy chemical. I can't say that it's at the same level, but it's the same endorphins you get when you have chocolate. Maybe not as immediate.
It's a close. Yeah, that's close.
Maybe not as immediate, but it's there. It's us tapping into humanity, and on the good way. And I think we need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's, I want to circle back to the book.
Okay.
And because I just think it's on the one level, it's very sweet, because I also know from our previous conversation that there was some therapy for you involved in this. The writing was helping you deal with the loss of an animal that was incredibly important to you, meant so much to you in your life, and being able to keep, it's Daisy May, right?
Oh, Lily Rose.
Lily, I'm sorry. Daisy May is still here.
Daisy May is still here.
But keeping this dog alive through the process of writing a story that included is huge. And then saying, okay, now what purpose then does this book have besides being my, you know, it's like journaling. I'm working through this, but what the messaging that this sends to the world, right?
So Lily Rose chose me. We were at a rescue looking at other Shih Tzu poodles, because Daisy May is a Shih Tzu poodle. And this little stinky miniature schnauzer comes up and paps me on my leg. So I give her a head rub, and then she taps me again. I give her another head rub. I saw her do a little dance. Apparently I wasn't giving her enough attention. So she jumped up and fell asleep right here. And she started to snore. And then I heard this exhale that to me said, I don't have to worry anymore. All my bad past is gone. This guy's going to take care of me. And it melted my heart. Every single time people would come into the house, if we were sitting, like our small group from church would sit and have our small group session, she would tap on their legs and get head rubs, go all the way around the circle, and then go back to those who gave her the better head rubs and get more head rubs. She was the kindest, sweetest, kindest dog that I've ever had. Just, it made all the sense in the world to write a book about her being kind. And it helped to heal me, because her death just destroyed me. I am not myself anymore because of what she took from me. I think she stole my heart, my bed, and my soul. But she gave me a driving factor of saying, you know, I have to recognize it and write something. This is actually the second book that I wrote. It's the first one to be published. The other book is called I Promise, which is Lily Rose remembering all of the things that we've gone through in our lives, starting actually at the end with her recounting running into the vet and her promises that I'll smile again, I'll laugh again, I'll remember well. That book was the quickest book I've ever written, but it was also the hardest book to write. But it was a healing process for me. And I'm looking to get that published for people who have lost a dog. And know exactly what I'm saying because they're going through it. And it's, there's a saying at my church that the worst thing is never the last thing. And I think these books help me to get to the next thing.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they're what I call folks who are sort of less in tune, don't understand the importance that our pets can have, especially dogs. But, you know, I know that for many people, the felines do the same thing. I think they're different beasts, but they do. And for other people, I honestly, I've known people who've had pigs and goats and certainly horses, right? But I recently, Jane Goodall died. And one of the things that I read that she had said was that to her, the dogs were the most magnificent beasts because of the love, the love that was just given and without the need. Not, you know, they want to be loved back. There's no doubt. You know, just talked about going around the circle and getting head scratched and coming back to the people who did it the best. But in general, that love is done without, you know, without looking necessarily for it to come first from you. They'll give it to you first.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea of grace, where you give care to someone without any expectation of return, or you don't deserve it, as in the religious world, you get the grace of Jesus or God. Dogs do that. They love with grace. They give you the love without the expectation of the return. But when you do the return, they love you even more. And it's amazing to see. You know, I wanted to include Daisy and Lily in The Night Before Pommes because I thought the lesson would be easier to take and understand if it came from dogs as opposed to humans. And I think that's true in many ways. It's hard for us to learn from a human because we take on assumptions. But when the lesson comes from a dog, you don't have any assumptions.
Yeah. And one of the things that I wrote about a while ago in a newsletter was about the experience of walking my dog and recognizing that I had gotten into the habit of walking the dog and having sort of like, okay, I've got a certain amount of time. We're going to do 2.25 or whatever. I'm going to make this work. And realizing that for Brody, that wasn't, you know, the exercise part of the walk wasn't exactly his top priority.
Nope.
What was more important to him was the sniff. And he also sees things and looks up and just being in the moment.
Yes.
And so translating that to me and saying, okay, this is Brody's walk, right? If I'm going to get my exercise, I can do it a number of different ways, but this time is his time. And let me see if I can experience life as close as I can through his eyes. I can't do it through his nose, right?
Yep.
But dogs are present, right? Dogs are in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember walking her and she would check her messages and leave messages. And, you know, she would be actively looking at every bird. If there was a squirrel, it was time to run. If there wasn't a squirrel, we can just keep walking. And then every now and then it's good just to sit. So yeah. I spent some walks where I just sat on the ground with her. And, you know, it was really amazing to look over at her and see her brown eyes look back at me. And like, I think that was Lily looking at me saying, well, you finally got it. You know, we don't have to run and rush. We're just here.
Yeah. So thinking about these different ways that can bring us into the moment and seeing the importance, for example, of how this plays out with our family. Okay. I mean, clearly from my discussions with you, I see the picture of, for example, a couple that is pretty tight and very supportive of one another, but that can't be 100% of the time. And our ability to notice when we're not being present with, let's take a spouse at first and maybe a child or a colleague, you know, that's really important, isn't it?
It is. My wife and I both have worked from home for quite a long time. But previous to that, we had to take a little bit of downtime. So I'm not the best driver. I just get impatient. I'd rather just get to where I need to go. I'm not enjoying the idea of driving really ever. So when I would come home, I would ask my wife for 5 minutes so I can get rid of the stuff, just the drive in. And then I can engage in a more appropriate way. I can actually be present, the be here now attitude. But I need that moment in between. And for a lot of meetings that we have, a lot of people are back to back. They don't have time to breathe. So finishing your meeting with 5 minutes left and letting everyone go, so they have 5 minutes in between one meeting to the next, so they can take a breath, clear their space. If nothing else, go to the bathroom, we need to allow ourselves that. And I think it's a kind thing to do. And it's a very intentional thing to do as well, so that we're aware of where we are and who we are.
Yeah. I think of the need to close the virtual door, mm-hmm. right? So for me, you're talking about back to back to back to back. And that is our life in so many respects. And for so many people, and it's something that, interestingly, I'm a baby boomer. So my generation is getting pushback on, the demand to like back to the office, and Gen Z just doesn't have a work ethic. Bah, 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 bah. Honestly, the sense of, what we really want is to be the best we can be at work, but do this in a way where we can be present. And they may not use that language, right? But I want to take care of myself enough so that you're getting the best version of me. And that, I love that sense of 5 minutes at the end of a meeting. So close it at blank 55. And for me, that gives me the opportunity to do what I need to do, but then maybe even 30 seconds before the next meeting, do some deep breathing or close my eyes and just see the virtual door. That meeting's over. Funk. And then also set the intention. And this, we don't do this. Set the intention for what's coming up next.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, when I give myself the opportunity to do that, and I try to do that in coaching opportunities with people, say, this is how you're going to show up. I say, have that North Star. This is my role here. Mm-hmm. Because we forget. We get caught up.
Yeah. And that's really true. One of the mantras in training is to ask your client what success looks like. And I forget to ask myself that for Monday, what does success look like? And then really think about that. When I write it down, I want to think, where is kindness in this success statement? Sometimes it's my definition of success is to get to 5 o'clock. I've had days like that. And some days I don't make it to 5 o'clock. No, I know full well. But there's no kindness in that day. So it would be better for me to have a definition of success of being kind, being aware, being in the moment, just like you were talking about walking with your dog.
This is, to me, the backbone of this magic in the moment, mm-hmm. right? Because the magic here is when you're, what does success look like? And most people would say, I closed 10 deals. I got the project done on time, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, in that, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But what I'm hearing from you is that if this, my successful day is that I took care of some people, I treated everyone that I could with kindness, and in that, I got my job done, mm-hmm. to the very best I could, but I did it in a way that was respectful and considerate. And that made me feel that those are check marks for me that are really important. And you're creating a wonderful ripple effect. Because when you do that to other people, yep, there are going to be some people that bounces off,
yep.
like so much water off a duck's back. But for other people, they're going to notice it. And they're going to go, wow, that was different.
Oh, yeah.
What was, right?
Yeah.
And I know that that's a major aspect of what you want to accomplish with that, with the kindness challenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think there's a ripple effect that can occur. I can think immediately of the most kind thing that anyone's ever done for me. My wife and I were moving from New York to Kansas City. We had all our furniture in a big truck. And we had our car behind it, and my wife and I were driving the truck. We got to the beginning of Ohio, filled up our tank, well over $100. Driving all the way through, there was a snowstorm coming from behind. As we're driving, we had to stop in the middle of Ohio to get more gas. And our credit cards that we used and were planning to use were all like locked up because the previous charge was so much. They were going to hold it for 24 hours. So I went in to pay, and the lady said, well, this isn't working. And they called the company, the credit card company, and they told her why. So I'm pulling out all these other cards, trying to figure out how to divide this up among, hopefully not bounce anything or do anything weird. The gentleman behind me put his hand on my shoulder, put down his company credit card, and said, it's on me. And I was like, oh, I can't do that, because I had not only the gas, but I also had food. We were close to $150 worth of stuff. And he said, just pay it forward. And he said, I know it's November, but Merry Christmas. And so I've been trying to pay that forward ever since that moment. And I think I've done a pretty good job, but I still think there's more I can do.
That is an incredible example of the ripple effect.
Oh, yeah.
And hearing it straight from the gentleman's mouth, just pay it forward. And that was a concept that came out, I don't know, a decade or so ago.
Oh, yeah.
And quite frankly, it was huge at the time, and people would embrace it. I think it's kind of fallen off, hasn't it? It's like, there's not a lot of paying it forward. And I think let's rebrand it. Let's rebrand it as, the daily challenge of kindness. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we can, for some people, it may also help for them to begin with gratitude.
Yeah.
Because we're tying into some similar emotional feelings, right? But sometimes we need to take a moment to say, like the gentleman who did that for you, at that moment, there's huge gratitude. I could hear it. I could see it in your face as you were describing. And having that moment of saying, and letting that, by the way, just like the feeling of when someone's kind to you, that moment where you just go, wow, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Feel the endorphins, feel the warmth flowing through you. And you said, I want to feel that again, but I want other people to feel that. And I know that's such a driving purpose of yours. And the interesting thing is, in times of trouble, in chaos, and in uncertainty, the elements of gratitude and kindness can provide that foundation of letting the nervous system calm. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to be kind when you're running away or you're fighting or freezing,
yes.
Right? So knowing that we want to get to that spot where we're not having the Olympic hijack, and we can intentionally do something kind, or maybe if we need to break that, have a reframing, we can bring some gratitude in to say, you know what? The world's a mess right now, but I'm still alive. I'm here. I've got a family. I have a relationship with the divine, whatever it can be. Calm down. And then moving forward, using that, the goodness, the kindness. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. And that self-awareness is so important, because it's hard to pull kindness when you're not in a kindness mode.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I think this is a perfect spot for us to kind of move into sort of a closing. And I want to do this in a way that it ties things together. So the book, how can one find the book?
The book's coming out in November.
Okay.
So it would be next month. Yeah. We're hoping that it's going to end up. This is still a more tentative type of thing at this moment, because there's a lot that has to go along with it. But for November 17th is the date I'm hoping it hits. And what it'll do is it'll come in Amazon first. And from Amazon, you can buy it for 99 cents. And then it's encouraged that you leave a review of it. If you don't purchase it and just leave a review, you're not an authorized buyer, according to Amazon. And then the soft cover, the actual physical book, is coming out Wednesday the 19th. So it's going to be the Wednesday of that week.
Okay.
All my schedules that I have and all the different deadlines hit, that'll work. and we're letting life happen as it happens. So The 17th is my goal on Amazon. And then hopefully, if I do my stuff like I'm supposed to, the Night Before Promise may also be in Barnes & Noble and other bookstores. But
that's devoutly to be wished. I'm praying for that, my brother. And knowing how my life goes, I'm not exactly sure the date of the release of this episode. So if this is post November 17th, it's available to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also want to encourage people. Leaving a review is huge, and people may not recognize what that does for an author, podcaster, wink, wink. But it has an effect on the algorithm of people's coming into people's attention, into their feed, and things like The Night Before Promise, it needs to be shared. People need to know that it's around, have it available, and get to read it and share it. And then also the Kindness Challenge. How can people best participate with that?
Oh, the website I have for it doesn't have a very logical address. So the best way to get to it is actually to go to Linktree. It's linktr.ee with a / and then T Hunter Books, THUNTERBOOKS. T Hunter is the nickname my mom used to call me. And so I named my publishing group after her. In the Linktree app, it actually pops up with all the links to all my socials. So it's easier to get there than anywhere else. If you go to Instagram, my Instagram tag is Team Strength Through Faith, all one word, or Facebook, Timothy Matthews. I'm the only one who looks like me.
And it's one T in Matthews?
One T in Matthews, yeah.
That's a way to get to the right person.
Yeah.
And I want to salute your spirit, your heart, and the energy that you're putting behind the exposure to the wonderful works and the importance of kindness on a daily basis. You embody it. You model it. I'm grateful for our relationship.
Yes,
and I look forward to seeing what the future brings for you. I know the training company is very lucky to have your skill involved. And that's how we met. So I'll tip my hat to them. But in the meantime, blessings to you. And thank you for being such a really uplifting gift of this podcast. Thanks.
Thank you, Clayton. I appreciate it.
As always, I want to thank our guests today for sharing their stories, as well as my producer, Mary Ann Sanders, for all her work behind the scenes, and finally for the support of my friends at Meditation for Leadership through their sponsorship. Until next time, this is Clayton Platt reminding you to look for those moments of magic in your life that lead to mindfulness in real time.